Aloha. Welcome to today's episode from the Chiefs 9 podcast. I'm so super excited for this episode. We have two guests with us today. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Command Sergeant Major Brandon Kumalai, the current Command Sergeant Major for the 29th Infantry Brigade Combat Team.
Hey, this is Chief Master Sergeant Anthony Hubbard, the current Senior Enlisted Leader for the 297th Air Traffic Control Squadron.
And with us today, we also have Jeff.
Excellent. Thank you guys for joining. Thank you, Chief, for having us along. This is the episode about warrior ethos for the Chiefs 9 podcast series. Please stay tuned for all of the episodes. This is a very exciting topic for Chief and I know our guests here, so we're going to get right into it. I guess before we start, let's have a little bit of background on you guys. So if you guys can just tell us your Guard story. So Chief Hubbard, why don't you go first?
Sure. Yeah. So Chief Hubbard, I enlisted in the Air National Guard back in 1996. Enlisted in the 248 Air Traffic Control Squadron. At the time, it was actually Combat Communications Squadron in Meridian, Mississippi. Spent 19 years in the 186 Air Refueling Squadron out of Meridian, Mississippi. After that time, I got the opportunity to go work at the National Guard Bureau, which is the headquarters for the Air National Guard and the Army National Guard. So I got an opportunity to go up there, and I spent 6.5 years working on staff, doing a variety of functions. Got an opportunity to work with two great Air National Guard command chiefs, number 12 and number 13. Chief Ron Anderson and Chief Maurice Williams. Fantastic opportunity. Just kind of opened my eyes to a lot of the great things that the National Guard offers. And then recently, about 2 years ago, got the opportunity to come out to Hawaii, Air National Guard, and be the Senior Enlisted Leader for the 297 Air Traffic Control Squadron. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. A lot of deployments in between that time. A lot of opportunities to travel the world, see things, and a lot of opportunity to really talk and meet a lot of airmen throughout my career.
That's excellent. I didn't know that about you coming from National Guard Bureau. So what exactly brought you to Hawaii? Was it the position?
It was the position. So it was an opportunity and it was a position. So I was wrapping up my tour and the 297 had a transition of some personnel to leave the squadron. And I kind of got notified that, hey, there may be an opportunity at the 297 for you to come out and be the chief for the squadron. So I talked over with my family, got the blessings of my wife, and yeah, a couple of months later, we were flying across the Pacific.
Excellent. I hope you didn't have to twist your arm too hard going from Mississippi.
A little bit, but not too much.
All right, good. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Our Sergeant Major.
Yeah, I got quite an interesting story. So I'm a proud graduate of Waikia High School from the Big Island of Hawaii. I enlisted in the Hawaii Army National Guard in December of 1999. Initially, I was supposed to be a Black Hawk mechanic, 15 Tango, I believe it was. So that was, my passion was, being an auto mechanic, graduating from high school. And, once the recruiters got to me, it was like, what's your plans after high school? And I didn't really have a plan. The guard recruiter was the first one that got to me, sold me on the guard. And I was like, you want to work on helicopters and your friends are working on cars? It's like, absolutely. What a great thing. Obviously the college benefits and all that stuff. Just doing something different with my life. So when I first went to MAPS, they told me I was colorblind. I think it was a mistake because I've taken the test multiple times and I'm not colorblind. I can see things. But that changed my path drastically. So I enlisted in 2nd Battalion, 299 Infantry. That's what got me into the 29th Brigade. So I came up through the ranks as a young private. Spent a few years there, participated in the airport security mission. Started my AGR career in January of 2003, along with a few other guys that's still hard charging in the Harang. I've been around the 29th Brigade predominantly my whole career. 29th Support Battalion, HHC Brigade, when 2nd Battalion converted over for 1st of the 299 Cav, jumped back over there as a platoon sergeant. Back to the brigade for first sergeant duties. I did spend about 3 months outside of the 29th Brigade as the executive assistant to the Harang CSM. That was a very interesting job. Learned a lot there about strategic leadership. Spent some time over in the J3, up in the JOC, the nuts and bolts of the organization, pulling all the levers, not touching any buttons. Now I'm currently sitting in the G3 position and took over for the Brigade CSM in January of 2024. So it's been an awesome ride. It's been a very long journey with multiple deployments, multiple exercises and everything, but it's been very rewarding. It's been an awesome career so far.
Oh, that's a great mix. Yeah, we got somebody from in the organization, worked their way up, and we've got somebody who spent most of their career outside of state. Absolutely. So, great perspectives. Yeah.
So thank you guys for that introduction. So I guess we'll get into it. So the topic for today is warrior ethos. So I'd like to first start off, what does warrior ethos mean to you? And I guess we can start with Command Sergeant Major Kumalai.
His thoughts. It means a lot to me. The Army's answer to that is, I'll always place the mission first. I'll never accept defeat. I'll never quit. I'll never leave a fallen comrade. Those are kind of the principles that guide us as soldiers. You know, it's embedded in us from once we, start basic training and go through that training pipeline. It's embedded into everything that we do. What it means to me is you really have to be an expert at your job. You got to know your job, you got to do your job, and you got to take care of each other within the organization. When I say do your job, we have very complex jobs. We do things that not normal people do. It's very uncomfortable to be placed in stressful situations, but from the very get-go, our privates that go to basic training, the stress is turned on. That's all about being a warrior. So knowing your job, taking that leap of faith to join the armed forces, knowing your job, doing your job, and taking care of each other.
It's an excellent story. Yeah, I think that definitely resonates with what warrior ethos that are embedded in us and all of our components. So what about you, Chief Hubbard? What's your thoughts on?
Yeah, so super excited about this topic, right? Warrior ethos. I know I was talking to you previously, and we're doing a enlisted airmanship continuum course, and we're really focused on warrior ethos and what that means to the warfighter, to the airman in the situation of the Air National Guard. So what it means to me is it's really about understanding that we are war fighters first, right? And Sergeant Major said it perfectly, right? If you look at the Airman's Creed, it talks about, hey, we will not falter, we will not fail. That's mission first. We will accomplish the mission. That's at the heart of the warrior ethos, being lethal, being expeditionary, understanding your job, understanding the job of the person next to you, the guy behind you, the guy ahead of you, and going out and making sure that the mission gets accomplished. That's what warrior ethos means to me. Bring your best to the table every day, show up and show out.
Wow, I'm motivated by that.
Yeah.
What about you, Jeff?
You know what? Just like Sergeant Major said, it's embedded in you when you join right away, you get it, and you're gonna hear about it over and over once you learn responsibilities and new missions and as you progress throughout your military career. For myself, I was in JROTC in high school and then ROTC in college. And I got it early. And that kind of helped me focus the rest of my life. It let me know what I needed to do. And the biggest one that hit me, and it may not for everybody, is the never leave the fallen comrade behind. That's your battle buddy, that's your friend. And that one really stuck with me. I wrote down what you guys were saying, warfighter, do your job, know your job. And I think as I hear about it more and I hear about these new focuses on that topic, it'll kind of help me reevaluate. But when I was younger, the biggest impression on me was you don't leave anybody behind. If you do your job and you depend on those around you and you know your job and you're a warfighter first, your comrade will not be left behind. It's kind of an automatic step there. Well, how about you, Chief?
Well, I think just remembering what the culture is, right? Air Force culture, component culture, however you look at it. But for me, what was my guiding principles, I would always look at our enlisted force structure to talk about, to make sure to guide me in how to make decisions. And going back to our Air Force core values, and what do those words mean when I see it? So I use that as my warrior ethos to just keep me grounded and make me continue to think forward on how can I be the best airman that I can be.
So with this warrior ethos, everybody kind of hears about it and we as leaders hope it's ingrained in them. How do we know that our soldiers and airmen beneath us carry that same value? How do you, I guess, test the waters of your subordinates or those you lead that they're following through with warrior ethos?
Yeah, so it's I think it's in the culture of the organization, right? And you have to have a guide, so to speak, some kind of standard where you can measure that culture. How do you measure that culture? And that's the hardest part, I think, with trying to teach warrior ethos and talk about warrior ethos, is because it's one of those things that's really kind of hard to measure, right? When you look at the Airman's Creed, talk about being a wingman, being a leader, and being a warrior. We understand wingman really well. That's taking care of the man to my left and to my right. That's taking care of the woman to my left and to my right. We understand being a leader. We talk a lot about being a leader, right? Sometimes it's positional. Sometimes it's just having that influence over the organization or over a certain function. The warrior is the tough one. It's the tough one that to measure. I can measure being a wingman, right? I can measure you being a leader. But how do I measure you being a warrior? And I think for the expeditionary side of things, really we spend a lot of focus in training and doing regimental exercises and preparing for that. And I think holistically, as Chief Fox kind of said, when you look at the blue book, what we call it, and the brown book, which kind of outlines our force structure and how we force and what you should be doing at that particular rank, whether you're an airman, NCO, or senior NCO, and you take all that and you kind of measure out, okay, is this individual doing all the functions that are required as far as that enlisted force structure, and how well are they performing at those functions? How well are they leading their mission sets in an exercise environment? Are they lethal? Are they expeditionary? Are they agile? Those are the things that I look at when I'm measuring warrior ethos.
Seems like a lot of that could bleed over in basic evaluations and how they are during PT, how they are during exercises. Absolutely. You can see it in everything they do.
Absolutely. And that's five pillars, right? When you talk about the Air Force has these five pillars, right? Mental, spiritual, fitness is one of those, right? And so as you stack those pillars, those also build into that warrior ethos, right? Because you need to be strong in your spiritual. You need to be strong mentally. You need to be strong physically. You need to be strong on all of those five pillars of the airman whole person concept is what we call it. So yes, it does bleed over into everything that we do is about being a warrior.
That's true. Yeah. How about you?
Man, that's so eloquent.
I know, that's a great answer.
Can you ask the question again,
that's
please?
It's hard to follow. How do you see that warrior ethos is with your junior leaders or your people in your unit? You've been a sergeant major of a battalion, you know, platoon first, battalion, and the brigade. You've been at the highest level. How do you know that warrior ethos is kind of alive in the subordinates under you?
Pretty simple, sir. Open ranks, march. seriously, so... We train a lot. We train hard. We create training, and it's challenging, dynamic, realistic. So that's kind of our measure is, you know, create that training that's tough. You know, you've heard the saying, I should have had the quote, but, you know, a pint of sweat will save a gallon of blood when it relates to training and actual combat or warfare. So we challenge our troops through training, creating, you know, replicating combat scenarios. And it goes back to, you know, doing their jobs, knowing what they have to do as whatever their profession is within the Army. Another favorite measure that I have is our best warrior competitions. Something we do every year, you know, it's a pain in the butt because it takes so much resources and planning. And it's additional to what we normally do in the Army Guard. It's something that's extra, but the value you get from that is you're surrounded with everybody who wants to be there. They want to be the best warriors. They want to be the best of the best and subject themselves to the hardest possible situations that they can go through. So on the Army side, that's my favorite measure. You know, whoever shows up to that competition, they've already won in my eyes. And then it's up to them to battle it out and get recognized as state's best. We've had a good track record over the past 3 years. We took regional again 3 years in a row. So we got another soldier that's heading off to the national level competition in August.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I think that competition just breeds more warriors, right?
Yeah.
More people who want to represent our state.
Yeah, and it's a challenge. You know, a lot of them, they go off and do greater, bigger and better things within the Army. Three of our soldiers that competed in it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they're Green Berets now. They follow that pipeline. You know, some leaders, they see it as, oh, we're losing guardsmen. from the state of Hawaii. But that's not true, because for every one of those that you create 10 more that's behind them that want to do the best of the best. And, you know, if we do set them free and they do a conditional release or join the active component, it's a win for us because they came from the Hawaii Army National Guard and they're representing us. They carry that with them wherever they go. Yeah. And they always try to give back, you know, as much as they can. So it's a win-win overall.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Some of those names are, being in public affairs, we write stories about them, and they're legendary. And it does, I think, the experience that they've gone through, multiple people get to see it and they want to emulate it. I know the Air Guard has the Launa'oli Awards, and you feature units and individuals, and I've seen the videos. Right. Seems very competitive.
Yeah. Yes.
And you've been a part of those too, right?
Yeah, it was. It can be very. It's getting more competitive as the years go on, because we're seeing the value in recognizing our airmen in that program.
Yes.
And so Launa'oli has really excelled. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, you're a Launa'oli winner, and what does that mean when you represent Launa'oli? So right. Yeah. I think
that's a good measurement. That's an easy one to see in the open ranks too. You're just looking at your soldiers, inspecting that an airman that right, does that.
Right.
All right. You want to go to the next topic? I got one, but you do your question first.
I can do my question. How do you think our airmen and soldiers fit into the big picture when we're talking warrior ethos? Because we talked about the strategic mindset, right? Operational. How do you feel we could do better at making sure that they're aware of how they fit in to this bigger mission?
That's a tough question, Chief. So in the Army, you know, we're trained in our institutional training. We're always taught to know the mission two levels up. What that means is you gotta kind of solve your boss's problem and know that. So it's a lot on their plate, especially when you're looking at our young and our junior NCOs. That's a lot to learn. You know, they're expected to understand what's going on at the platoon level when they're just a team leader or a squad leader. That takes a lot of initiative, a lot of responsibility, a lot of maturity in itself, that they understand the bigger picture of what their small element is being asked to do. They may not understand it, but at least they have some sort of understanding that, you know, my company is tasked with seizing this type of key terrain at location X. But my job in that is I have to set up an ear ambush or a defensive position to block this so the main effort can go up and seize that key terrain. Kind of on the tactical level, but strategic wise, I don't know. You got any input?
That's a good metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to bring up this point too is, you know, you said because you're colorblind, you couldn't go into the.
I'm not colorblind. So
aviation mechanic.
It was a mistake.
Oh, sorry.
One of those. One of those recruiting employees.
But you ended up in one of the premier units in the Hawaii Guard, the infantry, which some people make fun of because that's to say, oh, that's where all the people with the lower ASVAB scores go. And for anybody who has not been in the brigade or been around them, that is complete legend and not true, because when I came from outside to in the brigade and got to see an infantry soldier and officer and NCO and how they operate, that was how I was taught. That was how it was supposed to be. And knowing the mission two levels up is a great example. And that can't be the case with everybody, but if you get a majority of them, then that's where the buddies pick them up, right? Then never leave the guy behind. If my partner doesn't understand what it is, I'm gonna make sure he knows it, or I'm gonna grab his arm and we're gonna get to that mission, well, whatever we need to do. But the infantry attention to detail is something that everybody needs to do, because you're a warrior first, and that's your job, is to be the warfighter first before you do anything else, and then you can do your specialized job. So by you being in that unit, I think you're able to take that experience and apply it to every single unit you've been in, and that was a blessing. How about you as far as the institutional training and kind of measuring the warrior ethos in the organization?
Yeah, I think it goes back to you know, some of the points earlier is it's really about discipline and training and how disciplined you are with your training, right? And that's why I say everything encompasses being a warrior. Being a wingman encompasses being a warrior. Being a leader encompasses being a warrior. And it's all about discipline, regimental type training. You know, as I said in the beginning, show up and show out every day. That's how you become a warrior. It requires discipline. It requires focus. One of the biggest things I think we kind of miss when we talk about being a warrior is the resiliency piece. You have to be able to bounce back. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to get beat up. You're going to fail. But failing is not failure until you don't get up. Get up and continue to press. Continue to push forward. I think that's some of the keys into defining that warrior and understanding, you know, the essence of kind of what that means at any level is being able to be resilient, be able to bounce back, have that discipline to say, okay, you may have knocked me down that time. I may have missed it, the mark. I may not have got that marksmanship this time, but I'll get it next time. I'll go and focus. I'll train. I'll shoot more. I'll engage more. And I'll succeed next time.
Chief, we're talking about Mike Tyson, right? Everybody has a plan until?
Get punched in the mouth. Absolutely. And that's so true, right? So when you get punched in the mouth, what's next?
Right?
What's next? Do you lie down? Do you curl up in a fetal position? Do you stay down? No, you get up. Maybe not if it's Mike Tyson. I may consider that fetal position, right. But yeah. But you have to get up. You have to get up, and you have to continue to fight.
Yeah.
And you have to continue to fight.
Nope, that is true. That is true. And I think there's a patent quote saying, you know, if you don't know what to do, do something. You know, make a decision. That really falls in line. Have you seen a difference from coming from Mississippi and then being a part of active duty as well as National Guard Bureau? Is there a difference between how you train or how you embed this warrior ethos into?
I don't think there's a difference. I think the difference comes in. It's unfortunate for the organization. And I've heard some command chiefs talked about that. I actually heard, I think it was Chief Denny Richardson. He's the command chief down at the 1st Air Force. He talked about, you know, sometimes we don't really realize when we definitely, as you talk about warrior ethos, until we become into some of these senior positions, right? And now it becomes really important to us and it becomes really valuable and we get it. What we struggle with and what we're trying to get to is we should get that at a much lower level. And I don't know if we don't talk about it enough or we don't understand it enough. But when you get into those senior positions, you become more responsible. You become more accountable to those airmen. You really become the caretaker, so to speak, right? And you know, you could lose sleep on making sure that everybody comes home. I want everybody to come home. And those are things that are pressing when you're in a deployed environment in a senior leadership position. And you know, you're thinking about their families, you're thinking about them, you're thinking about their kids, and you're saying, okay, I need to make sure that every single airman, every single soldier gets back. We understand that more as senior leaders than we do as NCOs and airmen. And so how do we bridge that gap? That's something I still struggle with. I don't have a clear answer on how do we get that down, but I think at a bare minimum, it's communication. It's talking about warrior ethos. It's talking about resilience.
Keeping it
at the forefront of their attention every opportunity we get.
I think as leaders, I don't know if you guys will agree, but as leaders, your to-do list gets a lot bigger. And, you know, there's a lot of important things you need to get to. On that list of things, warrior ethos, do you agree it should be somewhere near the top because of our state and federal missions?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with, you know, it's more important as a senior leader because, you know, coming up through the ranks, I was more afraid of, you know, my NCOs and supervisors than more so than the enemy. You know, I didn't want to, you know, disappoint, but, you know, if you fail something, you're going to get hemmed up real quick.
Yeah.
So warrior ethos in itself, just being in the ranks, you know, that was ingrained in us, you know, as a young NCO coming up. You know, I just didn't want to let my supervisors down. I didn't want to let my NCOs down.
Yeah.
Put everything, you know, before my own personal gratitude and whatnot. As a senior leader now, it's important that we prioritize it because it is one of those things that can kind of be put on the back burner. We have so much things that's on our plate. This week is crazy. We're prepping for annual training. There's vehicles moving, ammo's getting picked up, it's getting flown over. PCCs and PCIs are happening. You know, where ethos is, that's one of those things that it has to happen. It's not negotiable. You know, even if we don't talk about it, it's expected of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we do have two missions. We have the state mission. We have the federal mission. We've been involved in a lot of state missions over the, since 2018 to now. Three major ones, lava, COVID, and Maui wildfires. Federal missions, Air Guard, multiple deployments for your security forces, all your flying, even your combat comms. Mm-hmm. And then on the Army side, individual units, and recently the brigade just training up for their next possible deployment. But a lot of small units are on the block. Is there a difference of warrior ethos that you want to instill in your troops during state missions or federal? Is there a, because we're National Guard, we're that's a special type of unit, you've got to experience a lot of our domestic operations, going out to the field and talking to troops. But is there a difference between our federal and state mission as far as what we're ethos?
For me, there's no difference at all. It's the same set of principles that we have, that we share. You know, the 29th Brigade, we did our first JRTC rotation in 20 years. That took a lot of, you know, from our soldiers. That was a really tough and realistic training event. Probably the best training that I've ever had in my career of 24 years. You know, we got off the plane. Majority of us got off the plane coming home from that, expecting to throw it in neutral and kind of take a knee. But unfortunately, the Maui wildfires kicked off, you know, on the 8th of August. That was, you know, a day after I got back. Contract air, they left my bags behind. They didn't have any equipment, didn't have nothing. You know, working in the jock at the time, it was tough. You know, we didn't go home for about 5 nights. Mission first, you know, not complaining about it. But if you look across our formations, the National Guard's motto is always ready, always there. And our soldiers are, you know, time and time again, we ask so much of them, and they're always there at the drop of a moment's notice. You know, they're always there supporting the state. We're a little bit different from the active component, you know. We work with each other for an entire career in the military. I still serve with people I've known for over 20 years. So we tend to take that a lot more personal. We care about the individual a lot more. It's not, you know, 3 years, get to know you, do my leadership things, and I'm PCSing or you're PCSing, hope to run into you again. You know, we see them and their families shopping in the stores, you know, over a period of an entire career. And you can't fake that funk. You know, that's one of those things that's, I don't want to say you got it or you don't, but our relationships last a lot longer. It's lifelong friends that we make in the garden.
Yeah, no, agree with what Sergeant Major said about there's no difference, right, between the federal and the state mission. I've seen it at the Readiness Center, working at National Guard Bureau, right? You know, we have the crisis action cell, and no matter what the incident is or what the situation, right, when it happens, all hands on deck, right? You know, you go down to the deployment cell, and you start reaching out, you start making phone calls, you start contacting those states that are impacted, you start talking to those functional managers within the state. Same thing on the federal side, right? You find the right players, you find the right functional managers, whether that's at ACC, whether that's at USAFE, whether that's at, you know, out here in Pacific Air Force, and you start making those things happen, right? You reach out to those units that impacted and those units that can get the job done. And you say, hey, there's a call to action, state, federal, doesn't matter. You know, as Sergeant Major said, there's no time to take a knee. We always have to be ready. We always have to be prepared for that next event, that next incident. And it's double challenging for the National Guard because, yeah, we are different than active duty. We do have two bosses, so to speak, right? We have the governor, and then on certain situations, we have the president of the United States. And so we have to be ready to balance that. And our leaders do a great job at that. They do a great job at keeping the lines of communication open, keeping the hierarchy of, hey, I report to you this day, but I may report to this guy or this woman tomorrow. But we always have to be ready. We always have to be prepared to jump out and support whatever that state mission is, you know, and whatever that federal mission is. And we do a great job as a community. And it ties back into what you talked about with the Lanaeole, right? a lot of that I think can be looked at as, hey, you did all this stuff in your state, and look, this is how you've come out at the end, number one, in the Lane Ole, because of all this good stuff you did. Yeah, you can put some federal in there, but I think from a local standpoint, local community, a lot of that speaks to the volume of work that we do on the state side.
Oh, that is true.
You know, like what Sergeant Major said about the National Guard and the building the relationships and maintaining those long-lasting connections. I have seen enlisted leaders contacting me all the time, command chiefs, command sergeant majors from other states, just seeing how we're doing, if we need anything, especially when Maui wildfires have happened. So like the news travels, right? And I felt really good and honored that they cared enough about our state to check on us and make sure we were good and give me advice on how do we make sure that the force, you know, stays motivated, yes. You know? And so speaking of, how do you keep the force motivated? You know, when we talk about all these warrior ethos, these missions, these tasks, these requirements. So how do you guys motivate the force?
Yeah, I think it's just that old adage, right? People don't care until they know how much you care, right? And so you have to start there. You have to start with, you know, the soldiers, the airmen, knowing that, hey, we care, right? And it starts from the top, you know. And I think, again, that's why I say we have great leaders, because they show in all their communications that they care, right? We care about your families. We care about you. We care about the mission. We care about all this stuff, but it all goes back to people. I brief in the enlisted airmanship continuum that, you know, if you go and look at all the priorities, all the focus areas, and each and every one of them, what's in there?
People.
People. That's how you keep them motivated. If you put people first, the people will put the mission first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that everyone has a why. Everyone joined for a reason. And I think as a leader, once you understand that, once you can uncover their why, you can kind of adapt and motivate them a lot more. It understands what makes them tick, right? Why they show up, why they put the uniform on, why they rose their right hand. So I think it's important to understand, you know, our subordinates' why. Why'd you join?
Like that. That's real good.
Now, you mentioned the National Guard and, you know, wanting to come in and assist. And I've experienced that. They've reached out during lava, definitely COVID, what everybody's experiencing, but the Maui wildfires, they sent people right away. Yeah. And it just reinforces our warrior ethos. Okay, the high level people do it too. We're going to do it. It's contagious.
Yep.
Yes. And it always comes to the forefront.
So, hey, I think Jeff, it's time to wrap this all up, you know? So I'd like to just end with one last question for each of you is, what advice would you have to our leaders out there listening about warrior ethos, or any nuggets or anything, any piece of advice you want to give them or share a message?
I'll jump in. Know your job, do your job, take care of our soldiers. They're the most precious resource. Secondly, with being a warrior comes a lot of maintenance. So you really got to maintain yourself, your arms, and your equipment, just like in our soldier's creed. But, you know, taking account to your mental state, your overall health, and your wellness. You know, balancing that civilian career, your Army Guard career, and your family life, that's important, because a warrior is a total concept. It's not just about doing the hard things. It's about maintaining that and doing that over a span of 20 years.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Maintaining it helps you pace to prepare for the next one. That's right. A really good point.
Yeah.
Chief?
Yeah. So I'd like to start off with a quote, and it's from a Greek philosopher, Heraclitus. And he says, out of every 100 men, 10 shouldn't be there. 80 are just targets. 9 are the real fighters. And we're lucky to have them, for those 9 make the battle. Ah, but one. One is a warrior. And he will bring the others back. So as Sergeant Major said, I think the challenge, or what I would share with those leaders out there today, is to strive to be that one. If each of one of us strive to be that one, then we'll all be that one. And we'll all be better for it. The Hawaii Air National Guard, the Department of Defense, the military service will all be better for it. We'll get the mission accomplished. The mission will be first. If we all strive to be that one ultimate warrior. I think we'll be okay.
Excellent. We went from quoting Mike Tyson to Heracles.
That's okay.
That's a great jump. Yeah.
Well, I just want to thank today's guest for being on our episode with the theme of Warrior Ethos. Stay tuned for our next episode coming up, and we will talk with you all soon.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha.